the buyer to be well satisfied. To do otherwise would certainly be unwise on our part. ORS 701.0551 expressly states the registration requirements of a builder. We believe any party acting as a builder should register with the builder's board, and that mandatory registration should be enforced. We ask that you amend House Bill 2041 and reinsert subsection 11 of section 2 as per the amendments as submitted by the Oregon League of Financial Institutions. I would be pleased to respond to any questions.
Questions?
Yep,
Representative Bunn.
Do you really want to support the rest of the bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Bunn, yes, we would.
May I continue that question? Is there a specific reason for your support for the bill other than the fact that you would not want to be eliminated from this section?
Well, Madam Chair, the bill as it's presented appears from our viewpoint to be proper. We believe that the Builders Board in the past has done the job that it was intended to do.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Springer.
Marty, can you give me some sense of the figures over the past 2 or 3 years in terms of the extent to which lending institutions have sort of been backdoored into the residential property business? I get the sense it's been a pretty dramatic and untoward occurrence, and I guess that presents a lot of situations for you folks to have to deal with you didn't necessarily anticipate a few years ago.
Madam Chair, Representative Springer, the numbers are unbelievably high. I don't have them in front of me. I can tell you this, that at the present time, our institution currently owns property which amounts to approximately 2% of our overall overall assets. We're in the business to assist people to buy homes. We make subdivisions in order for those homes to be built. Unfortunately, and we're not blaming anyone, including ourselves, but with the economy as it is, a number of awfully good people have had to turn their homes back.
Just the same one.
I could pick up the phone today and call 10 to 12 people who have already volunteered to give us deeds in lieu of. We would rather work with them. We'd rather not do that. But unfortunately, many of the homes that we do get back have been abused, if you will, to the point that we have to go in and put the home back in a whole condition. We want to do it the right way, and we believe we do it the right way. And when we're finished with it, we usually end up making new loans for up to 30 years on the same home again. So I don't know if that answered your question or not.
That's helpful. I don't know where that information exists. I don't think it's particularly necessary for this purpose, but I guess that kind of verifies what I've sensed in the media in terms of just some additional responsibilities that have come your way. Thank you.
If there are no further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I understand you've I understand you are proposing the amendments, and we have amendments now that have been proposed by Oregon League of Financial Institutions, and part of that is the amendment you presented in terms of your testimony, the restoration of lines 41 and 42 on page 2.
Madam Chair, that's correct. And on page 3, I restore lines 1 and 2 and then line 1 after bank.
Okay, my follow-up question was, did you have any opposition to the amendments that have been proposed? Are you aware of the, let's see, line 3, you indicated 1 and 2, and then there's an additional amendment that we've been given. Line 3, deleting 11 and inserting 12.
Madam Chair, I'm aware of that, and we support that.
And you support that also. Okay. Thank you very much. I think it only fair to expect that we will not get today to HJR 6. And so if there are those of you that are here for that purpose, I would like to let you know that we're not going to make it today. Any of you that came from... No, we have no one scheduled from that looks like they're from out of town, so that would... I want to be sure we get to those of you that are here. We have three more signed up to testify. Mr. Bellinger?
Good
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. I have some testimony she's handing out there, and I just wanted to explain a little bit about floating homes and houseboats, because okay. This 2041 is incorporating them into the... My name is Bill Bellinger.
Thank you.
I'm a lobbyist for the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council. I want to speak to you on House Bill 2041. As past president of the Floating Homeowners Association, I wish to clarify a few items from testimony I heard Monday, February 11th. ORS 488.705 defines a floating home as a structure moored to a dock or piling that is used as a primary domicile. Incidentally, these laws are marine laws, boating laws. That's where the description of floating homes and houseboats comes from. I feel a more precise definition should be used by the Builders Board if they're going to enforce Builders Board rules on floating home builders. Most river dwellers would define a floating home as a houseboat. These are wood frame buildings, very similar in construction to homes on land. Incidentally, there are also many mobile homes on floats used as permanent houseboats. I mean, there's a... You're still talking about a houseboat, but they're manufactured housing. Mobile home, as in double-wide mobile homes that are sitting on wood floats.
Mobile houseboat.
Floating mobile houseboat.
Mobile houseboat.
Boathouses are wood frame structures usually used to house boats. These structures are also very similar to buildings on land. A shop or a small barn would be comparable. They may also have living quarters in them. Some permanent living quarters, others only used on weekends, but quite frequently they're nothing more than a vacation cabin, so to speak. They have refrigerators and washers and dryers, and they're essentially living quarters. There are houseboats that are manufactured by firms in the marine craft business. These vessels are usually powered and have marine licenses. They're often seen on rivers and lakes like Lake Shasta. Now, those are definitely marine-type things. They had to meet certifications for any vessel that Chris Craft or Tolly or anybody that makes boats would have fallen. I mean, these things would have fallen under their rules. The construction and remodel of the first two types of houseboat or boathouse use similar materials to houses on land, but method of construction is very different. A level cannot be used in construction, only a square, or some method to make sure the building is constructed squarely. There are approximately 500 to 550 houseboats and 200 to 300 boathouses in Oregon, and most of them on the Willamette and Columbia River. Now, the reason I put this here, if I may expand a little.
Certainly, go ahead.
Is this is a basic problem with someone building a houseboat or remodeling one. You can't walk up to a wall and put a level on it and plumb it up so that it's perpendicular, because when you walk to that side of the structure, it tips. So a level is absolutely worthless on a river. And someone who's built homes or houses may know very well how to build a nice house. It's nice and square and plumb and everything's the way it should be, and he gets down on a river and he is out of his depth, I'll tell you. I mean, it's a little...
So to speak,
too. So if the Builders Board wants to control these people, I mean, they've got to identify who they are to start with, and who is qualified to say a person is qualified to work and do repair work on a river. Plumbing is essentially the same, except any ground lines that are under the floor have to be installed some way before the builder saw the floor up, because there's no way to get underneath them. And it's just, I'm not opposing the idea of having some controls on people on the river, but who is going to police this? I'll finish reading this and then, to come to my point, I feel there's definitely a need for policing the people building and remodeling floating homes, but how can the Builders Board police an area that building inspectors seldom visit? Who is going to determine what is good and correct flotation system for a floating home? There technically are no building codes that cover some portions of floating homes. There's no code that covers the flotation itself. Flotation under houseboats can be a myriad of things. I know of a $175,000 houseboat that's floating on 36-inch galvanized culvert that was welded and compartmented, and I mean, this is a really nice home. I've seen another one that's four lifeboats off a freighter that were filled with styrofoam with a float built over them. You name it, it's down there, I'm telling you. And come up with a reasonable code for this, for someone that's even capable of building it, I would say there's probably only four or five people who can do this right. But there's probably 20 of them that are building them. Some just, you know, and that's the foundation for these buildings. If the float's bad, it's just like no foundation under a house on land. And then you've got this wood structure sitting on something that's falling apart under it, and they're really tough to fix. Essentially, you can't pick them up and stick something underneath them. Once they're done, that's it. I don't have a complete answer myself, but I do feel some real improvement could be made with more inspection or enforcement by the Builders Board. Without more people in the field and compulsory licensing, they're only a paper tiger. I think that several times here they've mentioned the building inspectors. They're not bound to do anything for them. If the building inspector so feels, he should ask somebody if they're bonded or if they're registered with a license with the Builders Board. They can. They don't have to. There's no law that says they have to. And if, in effect, the Builders Board is asking building inspection units all around the state or wherever they may be to do something for nothing. There's no benefit to them. Especially on the river. That's something that really got me when I read this thing. I'm not opposed to it being in there, but if you don't know something about the river and know how those places are built or who's actually down there doing the work, I don't see how you can effectively go down there and a bond or register with the Builders Board is one thing, but how do you know this person is qualified? I could go down there to the Builders Board and get a bond and be considered a builder on the river, but I have very little experience at actually building something there. I do know how they go together, and I know people that do that sort of thing, but it's really tough. There's a lot of houseboats that have been built without permits. The law, I read all the marine laws that cover them here just the other day after I thought I'd better know what I was talking about, and they're required to have a certificate with numbers, like a license plate. Now, there's one on the place that I live in. I have no idea where the certificate is. I wouldn't have the foggiest. The bank might have it. It's financed through a regular mortgage. But I know of at least six that a guy's built in the last 2 years that don't have any numbers on them. No certificate, no... Anyway, thank you for letting me vent my feelings here.
Thank you, Mr. Bellinger. And I think there are a lot of things maybe we might like to ask that would be somewhat humorous in their connotation, but is there anything specific that you'd like to ask Mr. Bellinger?
I think we need a subcommittee. Mr. Bellinger maybe can help us on that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have two witnesses left. Mr. Miner, I think if it's possible, we might hold you over if we don't have time. We have someone here from Portland. Walter Collins, would you come?
For the record, I'm Walter Collins, representing the Oregon Remodelers Association. I have submitted, Madam Chair and committee members, a brief statement relating to 2041. The Oregon Remodelers Association represents the remodeling industry in the state of Oregon. ORA supports the recommendations outlined in this bill with one reservation pertaining to Section 11, ORS 701.150, two sub B, lines 6 through 12 on page 9. Provided that the Builders Board has the numbers to support this proposed change, we would find it difficult to argue the evident fairness of allowing non-owner claimants access to any unused portion of the bond after the owner's claims have been satisfied. However, this question arises: would this additional access to the bond present additional risk exposure to the bonding company beyond what it now has, and therefore result in increased bonding rates to cover that risk? Appropriate testimony from the bonding companies on this point is recommended.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Collins? Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. John, I understand you would like to come forward for just a moment.
Madam Chair, with your timeline, I do have substantial testimony on the bill. I'd prefer to come back at another time if that would be possible.
Okay, may I just clarify,
I represent a bonding company and the American Insurance Association.
Okay.
We'll be speaking to this question plus the members of the bill and to some of Mr. Bunn's concerns.
Okay, and are you speaking for or against?
Both.
I love this.
Well,
whatever.
Don, would it be a problem for you to come back at a later time?
Uh-huh.
All right, thank you. Then let's close the hearing on House Bill 2041. Yes, I think the chair has asked us to consider a subcommittee for the purpose of the off-track betting bill, but you don't have the bill number on there for me.
2016.
I have found several folks who have decreasing interest in this bill in terms of investigation. Do we need to go into a hearing not to appoint it?
No, I don't believe.
Okay. The chair has asked that I serve as chair of the subcommittee, and that Representative Miller, Representative Peterson, and Representative Jolin serve on the subcommittee to investigate the off-track betting bill. If Representative Jolin has strong opposition to that, would you speak to the chair and see if a substitute member might be appropriate? What we do need to do is set up a time for a meeting on the on the subcommittee. And
I guess I have trouble figuring out when one puts in extra meetings in this business. I sit in the meeting just about all day, and you say subcommittee, and I think, and when does one do this? Do we meet at night?
Representative Peterson, your problem is not unique.
I'm sure it's not. I'm just wondering how you all solve it.
We don't.
Well, we can talk about it later, but... But I think I looked at my calendar and looked at a Tuesday, 5 to 7 in the evening, and wondered what that would do to your schedules, and I have not had a chance to check with either of you. But Christy, would you verify and see what that could be done to set up that schedule? And if you have strong opposition to serving on it, then we'll go ahead and try to schedule it, and then if you could talk to Representative Chairman Roberts on.
I think since you brought that up publicly, just to share with the members of this committee, it's not a matter of not wanting to serve on a subcommittee. I have strong opposition to the policy question that the bill addresses. And I just felt it really inappropriate for me to be on there if my mind were already closed.
Discuss that with the chairman.
I will do so.
Depending on how he feels about it. Tentatively, Tuesday, 5 to 7, and Christy will follow up. Thank you. Committee is adjourned.
What's the
yes,
number?
Christy?
Oh, well, it doesn't have to be on the record, though.
Okay, Christy, go ahead.
I have the vote by mail report.
You're trying to...